Good morning.
Good morning.
This afternoon, we will have a lay ordination.
Not hearing.
Oh, you're not hearing. Well, I'm talking. Let's say I'm all together.
Keep talking.
Power on, mute. Should be working now.
That's what I said. Yeah. Should be working.
There you go. Okay.
At least be louder.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Oh, yeah. I can hear myself now. Okay. I remember Suzuki Roshi having this problem, and then when the microphone went on, he said, "You think you're listening to my voice, but actually you're listening to electricity." This afternoon we're having a lay ordination for 10 people, I believe. Six people that I'm ordaining, 2 people that Alan is ordaining, and 2 people that Grace is ordaining, who are our students in practice here. So I want to talk about a little bit about what is ordination, what we're talking about, what we're doing, and about the precepts. Precepts, 16 bodhisattva precepts, which are central to this ordination ceremony. There are, in our particular lineage, have priest ordination and lay ordination. Lay ordination means to have to be ordained into the Sangha as a householder, so-called householder. And priest ordination is typically leaving home. So, zaike tokudo. Tokudo means ordination in Japanese. And zaike means lay ordination, and shukke means priest ordination. But leaving home and staying home are often mixed. So, historically, leaving home doesn't always mean going away somewhere. Householder doesn't necessarily mean being in one place. What binds them together is, how do you leave home without leaving home? So, wherever we are, this is our home. Whether it's in your house or someplace else. So I don't want to get into that conversation about what is the difference. Priests wear a traditional robe and carry the lineage and make sure that the lineage is of our school is carried down from generation to generation. So priest has that responsibility, and also the responsibility of making sure that the practice continues. So priest is a kind of visible person who attracts all the criticism and is happy to do so. When we have ordination, each person sews a robe, whether it's a whether it's a full robe or a which is called okesa, the small robe is called rakusu. As you see, if you, most of you, of course, know what I'm talking about, but I know there are people who don't. So I'm talking to people who don't, and I'm talking to people who do as if they don't. So the raksu is a small robe. Some people think, well, it's a token robe. It's not a token robe, it's the real thing, but it's small to be worn. Whenever you want, but mostly when we practice in the Zendo. Sometimes people think, "Oh, is that your bib? You people wear bibs?" Because sometimes they see the food on it.
Yeah.
But you're supposed to be very careful in the eating. So, in the history of Buddhism, 2,500 year history, there have been many styles of precepts. And when Buddhism came to Japan, even before our teacher Dogen Zenji, the precepts, which were like 250 or 350, were reduced to 16. And the 16 precepts is what we use today. There are major precepts and minor precepts. So basically, we take the major precepts. When we give ordination, we give the major precepts, which are 16. All the rest are called minor precepts, and they exist in various categories of categories of seriousness. So, 16, the minor precepts are what are more local, where the major precepts are universal for all Buddhists. Minor precepts are for like every society or country will create the minor precepts according to what's needed for that society. So we haven't really created the minor precepts yet in America. Suzuki Roshi said, someday, little by little, you will create your own minor precepts. Minor not meaning not serious, but rules to help us, not rules to chain us. So precepts are actually rules and rules to guide us and help us. Practice. That's the purpose of precepts. I'll explain each one actually, but precepts are, as Suzuki Roshi said, our own inner request. It's not some rules to bind us. And when we realize that they actually come from ourself, we can appreciate them. The first three precepts are to take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. We say take refuge. Sometimes you can also say to return to. So what does it mean to take refuge in Buddha? It means to take refuge in our own Buddha nature. Each one of us has Buddha nature, or is an expression of Buddha nature. So the first precept is to return to your own true nature, basically. That precept covers everything. All the rest is commentary. So in other words, act from your own big mind. If we're always acting from our own big mind, this is to take refuge in Buddha, not to take refuge in our small mind or our ego mind or our self-centered mind, but our Buddha mind, our Buddha nature, which goes beyond mind. We use the word mind to mean nature often. So to settle into our Buddha nature and act out of our Buddha nature, so that our small mind has a basis. So I would say to be centered on our Buddha nature rather than to be centered on our ego nature or self serving nature. So then there's to take refuge in the Dharma. Take refuge in Dharma is to take refuge in the practice, or take refuge in the way of liberation. To take refuge in the way of freedom. And to take refuge in Sangha means to take refuge, or to return, not to return, but to take refuge in those people that we practice with. But in a narrow sense, it means the people who are around you, and the people of the Sangha, but it also means to identify with humanity as a whole. Because all beings support us, and we support all beings, even though that's impossible. So Buddha Dharma is to vow to do the impossible. And then you might say, well, but that's impossible. Yes. to practice Buddhism totally is impossible. But we vow to do it. So that's our vow. So there are many impossible things that we vow to do. But if the Dharma isn't beyond our ability, then it doesn't mean much. So the Dharma is always drawing us out beyond what we think is our capability. And you vow to say, I think it's not.
Well, turn it just a teeny bit lower and then we won't get that loosely.
I'm using that.
Yeah. I don't think it's you, I think it's that.
Okay. Try.
Yeah.
So, we have the vow to save all beings. Right? And so this baffles. Do you hear me still?
Sure, I baffle a little bit.
We have the vow to save all beings. Which is, of course, if you think about it logically, it's impossible. But if you don't think about it logically, you can do it. Logic, you know, always stops us. That's the problem. It's the problem of government as well. Logic always stops us. If you listen to your advisors, you're lost. It's true. So this is our vow to save all sentient beings. It's our intention. It's not like, I'm going to do this. This is actually going to work. It's actually, no, this is our intention. So we have this impossible intention. So without the impossible intention, the intention, you never get beyond yourself. You always stay in a certain limbo. So we're always making that effort. And the place to start, of course, is with yourself. How do I save myself? Right? When we save our, when we work on saving ourselves, then all beings are also saved. What does save mean? What is salvation in Buddhism? It means to realize, to be enlightened, and really have enlightenment about what is delusion. To save ourselves from the world of suffering and delusion, that's salvation. To save all beings from the realm of suffering and confusion. So those are the three, it's called the three gems, the three jewels. The basis of, and it's a kind of triangle. So triangle is very strong. Triangle is like zazen. You know, when you sit in zazen with your legs crossed, your seat is like a triangle. Which is a very strong position, stable position. So, it's very hard to push you over. And you can experience a lot of things without being pushed over. You can accept everything without being pushed over. So this triangular base is very strong, and it's the basis of our practice. So I'm going to talk about the ten, what we call the ten core line precepts. So, and the three pure precepts. Three pure precepts are, you know, the Buddha Dharma Sangha is a large category. And then there's another category called the three pure precepts. Pure meaning non-dualistic, even though they're expressed in a dualistic way. So the first one is not to be caught by evil, not to express evil in your life. And also, we say, I vow to refrain from all action that stems from ignorance. We express this in various ways. Ignorance here meaning, sometimes it's called evil, sometimes it's called ignorance. Ignorance is pretty good because evil has a lot of connotations and it's hard to understand. Evil, I think one of the characteristics of evil are taking delight in the suffering of others. I think that's evil. And and then I vow to make every effort to reveal beginner's mind. That's a kind of that's nice. Basically, it means to do what is beneficial for everyone. So the first one is to not do things which are not beneficial, and to do things which are beneficial. But to reveal beginner's mind is a very nice way to say that, because beginner's mind is the end of practice. It's the culmination of our realization. and it's called Beginner's Mind. And then we say, I vow to benefit, live for the benefit of all beings. In other words, the bodhisattva turns over their life to benefit all beings, and not just to selfish, giving up selfish ways of acting and devoting your life to helping others. When you devote your life to helping others, then you are helped. The best way to help yourself is to help others. And but you shouldn't neglect taking care of yourself. If you don't take care of yourself, then others have to take care of you. You're not so good. But eventually, we have to give ourselves over to letting others help us. So, then there are the ten, what are usually called prohibitory precepts, but we call them the clear mind precepts, because there are two sides to precepts. One is prohibitory, which means don't. And the other side is encouraging precepts. The precepts of encouragement, which are do. So, in the past, you only received the prohibitory precepts. But under some influences, I have expanded it to both sides. It takes a little longer to say it, but I think that's more complete. So, I'm going to read the prohibitory precepts and the encouragement precepts, which are altogether the clear mind precepts. So, the first one, of course, is I resolve not to kill. First of all, I want to say that there are various levels of precepts. There's the literal level. There's the emptiness level. And in between is the bodhisattva level. But right now, I'm not going to get into all that because it doesn't take too much time. But you should know that those three levels are how we study precepts. When we say precepts of emptiness, it means if the precept is I resolve not to kill, on an absolute level, there is no such thing as killing. But you shouldn't stay there, because that gives you license to kill. Don't do that. So we have to understand that on the literal level, that's the foundation. But whenever we meet a situation, life precepts is how you act in every situation given the absolute level and the literal level. When you embody that understanding, then when you meet a situation, both of those aspects are present in your actions, in your decisions. So you are always acting out of reality, not just partiality or by rote. And so I resolve not to kill means the intention to kill something. You know, we cannot help but kill something. Everything we do is killing something. So then we categorize, well, let's see, what are the things that we won't kill and what are the things that we will kill? So we have these categories. And the things that we won't kill, the things that we will kill are things that we don't know about. Or maybe we won't kill animals, maybe we won't kill fish, maybe we won't kill... what it means, the precept means, don't kill intentionally, don't intentionally take life that you don't need to take. Don't kill for sport. Don't kill to gain advantage. It's about meanness and it's about selfishness. But you cannot help killing. As I say, when you do this, you're killing something that you can't see. Inside of our eyelids, you have millions of little critters that are always cleaning us up. Yeah. And so when you go like this, everything is eating everything else. It's the law of nature. That everything is devouring something. And everything that's devouring something is devouring something. Buddha called it the law of the fishes. The big fish eats a little fish, eats a little fish, eats a little fish. So this is a big subject. And that's as far as I want to go with it. So I resolve not to kill is the prohibitory precept. Even though you cannot help killing, you vow not to do it. That's so this is impossible precept. But it's also possible. So the positive side is cherish all life. So how do you not kill and cherish all life? This is why when we have a meal, we have a respect for the things that we're killing. Or we call it transforming. When we eat, we transform life. So as Suzuki Roshi used to say, we eat the noodle or we eat whatever, and when we eat, the whatever we're eating becomes transformed as we chew it, and as it loses its form, it releases its energy. So, and then this energy continues to live. This energy is continuing to live, even though its form is changing. So this is the way things work. So we express gratitude for the food that we eat, for allowing us to change its nature to its chemical nature, so that we can this organism has a chance to exist. So how we express gratitude or carefulness in how we change the nature of things, that's what's important. So the second precept is I resolve not to steal, not to take what's not given, actually. And then there's this kind of koan, but you honor the gift not yet given. So everything is a gift. You know, for a monk had three robes and a bowl. The one who's actually left home has three robes and a bowl and does not hunt for food but has a bowl. And because of their virtue, people will put something in it. If they have no virtue, nobody will put anything in it. And they'll starve to death. There are stories about that. So the gift, you know, everything is a gift. Staying alive is a gift. So if the monk takes something, then it's called stealing, actually. So the whole thing, their whole life depends on whether or not they have a good practice. So I resolve not to misuse sexuality. That's a big precept for the monk. It's like, don't have sex, period. And it's an offense to do that. For lay people, it's like, and so we have our we have express it in such a way as to say, don't misuse sexuality. It's not, don't do it, but do it in a way that is beneficial. And so the positive side is remain faithful in relationships. So we always encourage people to remain faithful in their relationships. So the fourth one is to resolve not to fib or not to lie, but to communicate the truth. That's a kind of no-brainer. I resolve not to sell, number five, I resolve not to sell and use the wine of drugs of delusion. So, archaically, it's don't sell liquor. But for us, it's don't sell or use any kind of intoxicants. We have to be careful about precepts. Precepts are guidelines. They're not rules. They're not. You may, transgress the precepts. Breaking the precept means that you totally disregard it and without compunction. But if you transgress the precept with remorse, you're not breaking the precept. Remorse means to realize that that's not what you really want to do, and to get back on the path. That's not breaking the precept. So we're always falling off. So precepts are impossible to keep literally and perfectly. It may seem simple, but it's not, because we're breaking them all the time. Not breaking, but falling off. And then getting back on. So, but if you think, well, it's not breaking the precept, and it isn't it, that's not right either. That's just using your leeway as an excuse. So, the positive side is to polish clarity. So, the reason for not having intoxicants is that they, even though it may seem like clarity, it's not true clarity. True clarity is the norm. You may want to see something in an extravagant way, or you may take some dope or something and you feel like, this is it. But actually, it's not. And you may, by taking some kind of dope to have real insight, great insights, which is okay. But if you follow that path, it's not okay. It's not a path. You may have an opening which gives you an insight, but then the curtain's closed. See that? Oh, wait a minute. My nose got caught in it. So don't get your nose caught. The next three actually are about how you interact with others. So the sixth one is, I resolve not to dwell or discuss the mistakes of others. Dwell on or discuss the mistakes of others. Everybody's making mistakes all the time. And to dwell on people's mistakes is a kind of diversion from your own way of doing things. So it's a kind of, it leads to a kind of ignorance to always be talking about others and their mistakes and their problems and so forth. And it creates a split between you and others. So since the positive side is to create wisdom from ignorance, you can use the same energy that you use. It's the same energy used to dwell on or discuss people's mistakes as look at your own problems. I remember Suzuki Roshi used to say, he said, when he walks through the Tassajara, he said, I don't look to the left or the right, I don't look around, I just go my way. Looking around means, oh, this guy's not so good, that one's not doing so well. Just go straight for yourself. That helps everybody. So the seventh one is, I resolve not to praise myself and downgrade others. So praising myself and downgrade, if we want to raise ourselves up, the best way to do that is to put everybody else down. Then you don't have to go anywhere. So but the positive side is to maintain modesty, putting others first. So modesty is to it's not a word that we use a lot these days. Actually, you're not. No. We promote do your thing, you know. Get your ego out there. But promoting modesty is very important. It's like knowing really who you are. And to put others first is really important. To know how to open the door for others, to serve others. You know, when everybody is serving everybody else, then that's called harmony. If everybody in the world was serving everybody else, there'd be no problem. So, number eight, I resolve not to withhold spiritual or material aid. Spirit in our practice, we don't divide spiritual from material. People talk about a spiritual practice. Yes, it's a spiritual practice, but it's not a spiritual practice as separate from mundane practice. Mundane practice for us is spiritual practice. Spiritual practice is mundane practice. Ordinary activity is spiritual practice for us. It's not some special way to do something spiritually. There's no spiritual thing that is divorced from our actual ordinary life. So the positive side is to share our understanding and giving freely of ourselves. Number nine is to resolve not to harbor ill will or anger. You notice it's a harbor, meaning to protect your ill will, to nurture ill will. We do get angry. We have all kinds of emotions and feelings that come up. That's normal. But whatever it is that we harbor, harbors us. Whatever it is that we catch hold of is actually catching hold of us. So, in order to find our freedom, we have to let go of being caught by anger. So, the antidote is to dwell in equanimity. And the last one is, I'm resolved not to abuse the three treasures, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. It's a little self-serving, but it's okay. In respecting the Buddha, unfolding the Dharma and nourishing the Sangha. That's all you have to do. In order to not abuse the three treasures, all you have to do is respect the Buddha, unfolding the Dharma and nourishing the Sangha. So, I have a little note that I wrote here some time ago. Within the Buddha Dharma, all practitioners of the Buddha way are on the same path. The same Dharma, the same realization, the same practice. So the faults of others will not be discussed. I would like to take questions, but I won't because it's time to go.